Moist.
Feces.
Moist feces. Nice.
Well, you can stop that anytime you want.
Yes, Dad. You're the boss.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 21, recorded May 16th, 2012. I am Joel Duggan of StarCrossedOnline.com, and to my right is Mr. Peyton Francis of CardboardTreehouse.com. Peyton, how are you doing tonight?
I'm busy, recovering from a cold, tired, all that fun stuff. It's all good,
Fantastic to hear. I'm glad you're feeling better. To my other right is Mr. Chad Merlin, back again from, not being here. Seems to be a pattern. Hopefully one that we will remedy in the not so near future, but possibly the distant future. And the only thing that you need to know about Chad is that you don't need to know anything about Chad, although knowing when he's actually going to be here would be nice. Chad, how are you doing tonight?
Excellent. I will not be here for the next 5 weeks. How's that for you?
What's your parole officer say about all this?
Well, I'm not supposed to talk about it, Peyton.
Oh,
but
okay,
thanks.
I'm sorry.
I'll post those pictures of your house online from your window. Outside.
Okay. right. I'll wave to you. Let me know when you're taking them.
GPS, right? What you'll see in the window is a two-year-old flipping the bird.
Yes.
Boing!
If you happen to be new to the podcast, the Citadel Cafe is where we three come to hang out to talk about the things that we've been into lately. We gravitate towards geeky sci-fi and fantasy stuff, but we're not myopic. We cover everything from movies to television to books, apps, and even websites. So to start off, some small talk. I have nothing to say, so I'm going to throw it to you guys because I was busy and I worked all weekend. And the one thing I did, I'm going to be talking about later in the show. So Peyton, what's new with you?
Just getting over the cold. It was Mother's Day around these parts over the weekend, so that was fun. We had a big breakfast. My wife had gone out for a girls' night with her sister on Friday night, so me and the boy flying solo on Friday night and Saturday morning, so I took him to the market and all that fun stuff, and he didn't see my wife all day, and saw her later in the evening. So on Sunday morning, on Mother's Day, when she was hoping to sleep in, he decided to wake up at 5 o'clock saying, "Mommy, Mommy." And she goes in, he's like, "Mommy, miss you." So she's up then. So she was up since 5 in the morning. So we had a big breakfast, went to Shuby Wildlife Park, and that was a lot of fun. So he, when we first went into the park, there was a great peacock on a rail there, and let the big peacock noise thing, and it scared life out of him, right? So whenever he heard a peacock anywhere in the park after, he was always like, "Peacock loudy," and peacock frayed, anyway, all that fun stuff. So anyway, so that's that. And he's the language is coming along faster with him. I was telling Joel the other day, he put me in my place the other night. We normally read books to him before you put them down in the evening. And one book you read over and over again is Robert the Rose Horse. It's an old, probably from the 50s or so, Dr. Seuss book. And anyway, Robert's allergic to roses, so he sneezes, and that ends up saving the day, sort of thing. But we read it every night, pretty much. So this one time I was reading it, and I started to sing the reading to him, and he hates my singing. And he gets really fidgety when I sing, and Lee was trying to keep him calm, and I got about 4 pages in, I started really getting into it, like I was rapping, singing, and he stuck his index finger up and goes, "Calm." And then he put his hand up and went, "Calm." He's like, calm down, Daddy, calm down, right? Well, Lee and I lost it. We laughed so hard that I had to leave the room for a minute, right? Anyway, so they grow up so fast. And a friend of ours had a kid over the weekend, too, so that was fun, so...
Oh, that's right. Matt
had a little girl, so I kept teasing him, saying that you will be around for his first date shortly, and he was saying, "Keep your son away from my daughter," and all this stuff. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I was thinking this morning when I when I was thinking about dropping Matt a line, I saw a post on Facebook that he was just thanking everybody for their well wishes and stuff like that. And I just kind of, when people have babies, I just kind of shy away. I wait until the dust has settled. And then I send a, you know, heartfelt, hey, how's it going? I might even call him, seeing as he's one of my good friends.
Yeah.
But I was thinking we should mess with his daughter later on when she's able to write her name and convince her to only use her first initial.
Okay.
So that she'll be signing everything a foot. which I think will be kind of fun.
Yeah.
So we have a mission, good sir.
Yes. So. Yes.
Chad, what's going on with you? You mentioned you were going away for some time.
Yeah, leaving for a month or 5 weeks. So for work related nice. Things. So not the parole officer returning to the clink.
That was a joke. That was a joke.
Yeah.
Exactly. Insert disclaimer here.
I know our viewers or listeners don't know anything about Chad, so. Yeah, that was a joke.
So, but it's for 5 weeks. It's on the other side of the country, so it'll be fun and get to see some friends I haven't seen in a while, and plus work and stuff too, and even some family and stuff. So, trying to tie up some loose ends this week. I played my last game of ball hockey tonight, and that was pretty sad.
Did you cry?
No, I did not. But we ended up getting our asses handed to us. So, either way, it was a shameful end to the season for me. But anyways, working on it. Tomorrow get up and take my time. Might treat myself to a little Tim Hortons tomorrow morning, you know.
As a treat? Anyway,
a treat? Yeah,
That's not a punishment?
No, it's not a punishment.
I can't resist, man. You open up the door and it's just
I know,
like...
it's back and forth. It is a treat. The chat room concurs.
Yeah, the one person in the live chat room.
Yeah.
Who happens to be unhappy with me at the moment. So.
Yeah, who is utterly faithful.
Well, I used to think peeps were a treat too, but I was wrong. So.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. That's true. So yeah, I guess since we mentioned the chat room, hi chat room. GIS
chat room.
Gamer is in there right now. We record live every Wednesday evening at 7:30 Eastern, usually for about 60 to 90 minutes. We sometimes run a little bit long, but we're going to try to tie it up in a nice, neat little bow tonight because people have places to go and things to see and stuff to do. So I guess we can roll right into the first segment, which is movies, TV, and video. And it happens to be the 7th episode of Game of Thrones, A Man Without Honor. So spoiler alert, blah, spoiler, 1L, alert, if you have not seen episode 7, you should do so before you listen to this segment because we talk about it in depth and what we thought about all the cool stuff that happened, and we will ruin the crap out of it for you if you haven't seen it. The name of the episode comes from Catelyn Stark's assessment of Sir Jaime Lannister. You are a man without honor after he kills a member of his own family in order to attempt to escape. So
well, it was a distant cousin, though. So
well, yeah. I mean, it was the cousin, and I mean, given the Lannister incest, I mean, Lord knows what kind of genetic, you know, issues he might have had, depending on who his parents were. Apparently, though, Jaime was trying to suss out who he was and was talking about his fat mother or someone's fat Lannister, the only fat Lannister. And if she was your mother, you'd know. some of the interesting things that he said were really quite interesting. So, I mean, rather than jumping around, what did you guys think of the scenes in the show with Jaime?
I really liked it. He's been, you know, pretty much absent for the most part for the season. And it really... Yeah, it's nice for him to have some good lines, like, you know, looking at Brianna, I was like, is that a woman? and the entire, like, oh, good old Ned, you know? Like,
remember Ned.
he's trying to either escape or get himself killed, you know, one or the other, right? So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think he was trying to see if anybody would do anything stupid.
Yeah.
You know, like, get close enough to him so he could do something like bite their ear off or do whatever. I mean, obviously it worked when he killed his cousin. I can't remember his name.
His cousin.
Yeah.
But, like, seriously, like, no one, like, family, it's, you know, it's, yeah, the lesser cousin. And that really shows Jaime Lannister at the heart, you know, like.
Yeah.
He's an evil bugger, man.
Yep, he is.
Yeah. But I like him. Like, I don't dislike him.
Yeah,
I think the evil.
He's evil. He's evil by our standards, but by his own moral code, you know, he has a job to do, and his job is to get back in the fight. So,
Joel,
yeah,
had you not read forward past the second book, would you still like him?
Yes.
Because of the actor or the character?
It's a combination. The actor is doing a really good job. The lines and dialogue that are written for him are really good, and I think the big difference is that he is the opposite of Theon. Theon and Jaime are both smug, self-righteous, and expectant, except for Jaime deserves to be feared.
Yeah.
Whereas Theon is basically a puppy that thinks he's got teeth. Like, yeah. There's a big difference there, and it's like Darth Vader. He's evil, but everybody likes him, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's got, you know, all these cool powers, and he deserves to be feared. And I think that's the difference. It's not like I like the character, or like the evil things that he does. I don't like the fact that he smushes somebody's brain in with a rock while he's twitching on the bottom of the cell. That was graphic, but
but his entire talk about when he was a squire and how, you know, this guy was a painter and he was a painter painting with red all the time and all this stuff, and you know, he sort of gives his like how much he actually enjoys the theater of war and how that is his art form. So
I agree, and I think that they're starting to do that with not only Jaime but also Tywin and Arya. One of the things that I really enjoy about all those exchanges is that even though Tywin is kind of like the mastermind Lannister behind all these really nasty moves, he is separated from it. Like, you don't ever see him kill anybody. You don't ever see him...
even though they hung 20 people.
You hear about it after the fact. You don't see him standing there watching with a grin on his face as people are, you know, struggling for breath at the end of a rope. Yeah. But they start to give him character. He talks about his dad. He talks about the legacy that he wants to leave to his children. Yeah. So you understand his motivations. Yeah. And he's still not a nice guy, but you kind of still get where he's coming from.
Yeah, and like, you're also wondering, like, does he... understand who Arya is, because, you know, he
knows
doesn't,
she's highborn, he's figured it out,
so he's, you know, it's pretty, like, he's taking a real shine to her. It's pretty funny.
I mean he likes her for the same reason I think we all like her. I mean, when she answers really quickly that most girls are idiots in response to one of Tywin's quips, like, I mean, I got a laugh out of both Jocelyn and I. We were watching the show live together, and it was there was a lot of really good moments in that speech. You know, what happened to Harrenhal? Dragons happened to Harrenhal.
And it was a great wide shot too.
From the room. Nice. Devastation.
Yeah, I think the general consensus for me and Jocelyn as well is that the Tywin / Arya, anything that happens in Harrenhal so far this season has been great, and it's shining despite the fact that it's a grim, grim place.
Yeah, well, he's doing his little monologue, and she's holding him, like, looking at the back of his neck, right? thinking, could I do it? Could I do it, right?
Yeah, just as he turns around and looks at
him. She's like, oh, what? What? Sorry.
Oh, no, at the back of your neck? No, it's for the lamb chops, man. We talked about it.
And he does get fed up with her at some point, doesn't he?
Yeah.
What does she say? I don't remember.
Just careful, girl, right? And I think she gets a little too
careful.
Yeah, she said something about lords or something.
Well, he now, this was in the book too, and I was happy they finally brought this up because he says, my lord.
Yeah.
Right? He says, not my lord, it's my lord. Yeah. Right? You have to, and that's the lower born, it's my lord. Yeah. Higher born, it's my lord. And he picked up right up on that. And I remember that, and I was wondering when that was going to come up, and that was cool that he caught her on that.
Mm.
Yeah, but then she sort of covered pretty quickly as well. So
yeah, but he knew, he saw right through her.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
It's Tywin Lannister, and he would. But besides, this guy was a Bond villain at one point in his career. This guy's got cred, right?
He was also the villain in. Wasn't he the villain in Last Action Hero with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
yeah. He was the Doctor in Alien 3.
Prison.
Oh, he was. Yes, the heroin addict. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, morphine. Yeah.
Morphine addict. Yeah. Yeah.
See, I don't remember either of those very well. I haven't seen them that many times.
And he was For Your Eyes Only. He was the. He was just a Bond villain, but on the beach when they ran over the girl with the dune buggies. He was one of those guys. Yeah.
Interesting.
Only because I watched that recently, I was like, "Hey, wait a minute!"
You know, it's silly. I actually have every Bond movie with the exception of the Daniel Craig episodes, the latest ones.
Nice.
From my dad via DVD. So They don't always look fantastic scaled up on a Blu-ray player, but...
yeah, DVD's dead technology.
Well, it's not so much that, it's the fact that they were filmed to begin with, that was then taken to digital, so like they've probably been remastered and retouched, and they kind of look a little kludgy, for the lack of a better word. Not a lot of contrast, everything's kind of the same.
Dude, if you can make it through on your on Her Majesty's Secret Service with George Lazenby, you can do anything.
Yeah, well, I haven't. That's the thing, I haven't gotten that far. I started watching the Sean Connery ones.
Okay.
So, but it's silly that I haven't watched them more frequently because a lot of times I'm stuck here flipping through Netflix trying to figure out, like, what the hell am I going to watch? And I forget that I've got this entire set of DVDs that I either haven't seen or haven't seen in so long that I don't remember the plots or the jokes or anything like that, right?
James Bond wins.
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah.
No, and he sleeps with a girl.
But it's how he wins that matters. It's how he wins. I did watch one of them out of order. I went ahead and watched...
Don't tell me you watched... Don't tell me you watched a friggin' Pierce Brosnan one out of order.
Yeah, it was GoldenEye. Because I think we were talking about Sean Bean back when we first started watching
Game
of Thrones, and I wanted to see him in a movie where he died, which is apparently not that hard.
And it really
Ronan.
Is not
watch
hard.
Ronan. He doesn't die in Ronan.
Doesn't die... Okay.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, I get speaking of Arya and the Stark girls, we can talk about Sansa, and bring this right back to
hell of a segue.
Hell of a segue. Yeah. You know, like, especially when people point at it and jape and say that's not a segue. It's only got three wheels. No. The scene with Sansa and the Hound was more of a scene with the Hound than Sansa, because she doesn't really ever say anything, I really enjoyed it because it's one of those villains that he will do evil stuff and hurtful things and enjoy them. Mm-hmm. But he still manages to, at certain points, have either a scapegoat, he's following King's orders, or a defense, as in I'm saving a girl from being raped and that's why I'm gutting people left, right, and center. But like, again, it's like these evil, evil things that are happening for either duty or good reason, and all of which kind of fit under the word honor in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, well, he seems to take time to smell the roses, so. You know, if I'm going to kill a guy, I might as well, be present in the moment if we're going to take this guy's life.
Right? Yeah, I suppose.
You know, it's kind of zen of him, you know?
Drink it in, right?
Yeah, drink it in. I felt so bad for her when her flowering happened.
Yes. Yeah.
But now the producers look kind of stupid because she's 15 and this happened, because that's how they basically made her out to be, is 15, didn't they? Because in the books, she's really young.
She's 13 in the books,
yeah,
I think.
Yep. So, and then Shay, helped her with it, and that she didn't have before, she was by herself. So I like the fact that they brought in Shay to help her. Yeah. Like, I'm happy that they're finding things to give this character, right? And that she's not where, she typically is. But at the same time, and then the other maid came in and she's like, where are you going?
Yeah.
I want to tell the queen. No, you're not. Yeah, well, yeah, she is, so.
Well, Jocelyn made a point about that too when we were watching it. Shay gets all tough as nails and puts a knife to the girl's throat and says, "You will say nothing to anyone." And then lets her go. Wow.
Yeah, I figured she's going to walk across the room, pitch her through a window or something.
That would have been actually better. I would have liked to have seen that.
Well, I guess they had, with regards to Sansa, I guess they would have to make her that old. Otherwise, the younger children wouldn't really be able to believable in the roles that they're playing. So.
That's true, yeah.
Well, everybody in the whole... anybody under 20 in the series is kind of skewed older just because of the sex and stuff that happens. I mean, Daenerys in the books is 14. So they obviously have to push her a little bit older.
She had a Dothraki warlord as her.
Yeah.
He's not gentle.
Yeah, precisely. So
George Martin's got that twisted mind when it comes to sex anyway. So
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that they've twisted it, or not twisted it, that they've updated, I guess, for a modern audience. Because, I mean, those scenes in the books made me uncomfortable whenever anything like that was happening.
I mean, when they talk about the... Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, that part. Yep.
Moist was used. The word moist was used.
Nice.
Oh. Sorry, guys, I got a chocolate chip cookie delivery and a cup of tea, so yeah, throughout this conversation. So I'm going to turn my mic off every time I crunch into one. So just so you know, if I'm late to respond, there's a reason why I can't turn down moist chocolate.
I'll just sit here quietly with my stale bread and water.
Yeah, I'll just announce that Chad's not talking because he has a mouthful of cookie.
Yes. Cookie. Yeah. C is for cookie.
Well, when they switch over to Rob, they further illustrate again
that he's a dummy.
Well, not a dummy. He's got character. This is what I see. This is the thing that I like about this episode versus the last one. The last one was a festering pile of crap compared to the other stuff that we are used to with the show. but I like the fact that they're spending so much time on developing the polar opposites in the characters in the show. And Rob, being the leader of the good guys, is very honorable and wants to make sure even the Lannister wounded are being treated right. I understand he's got different motivations for taking this girl with him. But I still think that it's worth seeing, and it's not wasted dialogue. Like, it's important. It has weight with you when you leave the scene. The last thing that he says is very poignant about, you know, making sure that all the wounded men are treated properly. So I like that stuff. Do you guys have no time for it, or do you think that it's fluff?
No, I think it's just, you know,
character development. You're right. You're right.
Yeah, it works, right?
Yeah. But I'm still, you know, you can see it. Like, Rob, really, you have thousands of people at your command and that rely on your decisions, and you're putting the moves on another woman and your promise to somebody else.
Yeah.
That says a lot about the king. So, I mean, he's not Joffrey King, obviously. No one will ever be that low, mm-hmm. you know. But that says something, man. He's playing with people's lives. And the Karstarks, you know, when we'll get to that later, I guess. But, you know, when Catelyn steps in and says, you know, you're sworn to your bannerman, and he's got a fine. You know, you can see he's got a fine. There's a fine line in the alliance. It can break so easy, mm-hmm. right? That he has to be careful. And he's setting himself up, and he doesn't see it. And that's he's thinking with the little head instead of the big head. So
yeah. Well, he's also supposed to be 16.
Totally, but he has advisors, right? And his mother's there, for God's sake.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yes, but whenever you ever listen to your mother when it comes to dating.
Yeah, well, I mean, Joffrey certainly doesn't listen to anybody,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think that was one of the cooler things that happened in correlation with Cersei this episode was that she is now outwardly admitting the monster that is her son.
Yeah.
And to the point where, I mean, she has a very, I don't want to say touching, but a revealing moment when she's talking with Sansa after Sansa, you know, flowers, and she has to explain to Sansa, you know, hey, this is how the real world works. This is what birthing children is like, and this is what you are going to go through. And Sansa, of course, just kind of remains, you know, blindly dutiful and is just kind of going through the motions to make sure she doesn't get step in any shit. But Cersei reveals something about the more people that you love, the weaker that you are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, she's obviously been hurt in so many different ways by men. And I don't necessarily mean like physically, but just emotionally and her pride and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it really kind of underlines why she's so damn angry all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
she did soften in that episode, I noticed.
So. She did. And this is the thing where you don't necessarily, like, you don't feel sorry for Jaime Lannister. You don't feel sorry for the Hound, despite the fact that he had his face burned when he was a child.
But his grown brother.
But you do, in a way, sort of feel sorry for Cersei, despite the fact that she's the one that took Ned's head, essentially.
Mm-hmm. You know? She is, at the very beginning, it was her. Jaime threw Bran out the window for love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of his sister, because she freaked out. You know, she wanted Joffrey. She made Joffrey powerful. She made sure that Lancel Lannister was with the king, feeding him his wine in the during the hunt. You know, I don't think ultimately she saw the end game and where everything was going to end up. And I think obviously her love for Jaime and she her views are jaded on how things should be. But most of her decisions, most of the things that she did early on has had massive effects, you know, on the show, on the Westeros in general. And, you know, and then, there, of course, like, you know, family loyalties, you're going to stand up, you know, your daughter just, you know, basically did something really bad. Well, the father stepped in and marched his armies onto the field and let's do this, you know, like what better time than now kind of thing.
So. Yeah. I think GIS Gamer in the chat room has a really good point saying that I believe you guys called her Hitler in an earlier episode and now you feel sorry for her. And that's the thing. That's exactly the point that I'm trying to make is that because they reveal these things so slowly and she has this giant defensive wall up all the time through season one and through most of season two, it's really poignant when those walls start to come down.
Yeah, I don't know if we say we like her, but we understand her more. Or don't feel sorry for her. We just, you know, you see her point of view, right?
Well, you're a parent. I mean, what would you feel if Ewan became a monster? You know, like...
No, sorry.
Nice. But like, you know, I think there's a certain relationship between, you know, her and her children that they're trying to focus on in the show. And I like it better than the way that she's written in the books. Cause I think there's certain things that you empathize more when you see visually versus when you read it on paper.
Mm-hmm. Well, they sort of set her up in the show to not have any power other than that of a mother at this point, because she's no longer queen. She's queen regent. So,
And that only stays until Joffrey's 16. I think.
Sure. But he's already 16, isn't he?
No, he's 13. Or
okay. No, well, he has name day. Wasn't it 16? Or
no, name day is just your birthday. Okay. They may change it for the show, again, to skew kids older, but there's a certain age where you were a man grown, and I want to say that it's 15 or 16.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of times where they say you're almost a man grown. You know, like in a way. What is that?
It might have been me. Don't worry about it. Okay. Sorry. Never mind.
What kind of cookies are they, man?
It wasn't a cookie, okay? That was me. It was me. I was trying to do something I shouldn't have done. I apologize.
Okay. I don't remember what I was talking about.
I'm sorry, man. Chad throws out a rat hole. I'm sorry. Sorry.
Now you're not talking to us. Don't talk. You have to talk to us. Talk to us.
No, I'm just trying to write something down. I'm sorry.
Oh, shit. Now we're staying after class, Peyton.
You started it.
Did not. I know I can mute my mic. Thank you very, very much, Jeff.
What was I talking about?
We all have brain farts here now. Oh my god.
Professionalism at its finest.
You said her power as a mother, name day.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was just about to mention that Catelyn, when Catelyn speaks to her son Rob, she says you're almost a man grown, but then corrects herself and then says he is a man grown because he's pulling on the responsibilities of a king. So he's not quite there yet, or he's barely there. Maybe he wasn't in season one, but is now. I mean, it's hard to really figure out the passage of time when you're watching things in hour-long segments on TV.
Yeah.
So, with that episode with Cersei, one of the other things that you get to see is a really touching moment between Tyrion and Cersei, which I didn't see coming.
It was definitely a rare moment for sure.
Yeah. And it's really all you get from Tyrion in this episode, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I know. I look forward to his bits because they got him so compressed now. But even when he does say stuff, boom, he's always something good or something funny. Like, you're a brilliant tactician or plans or something. And he's like, he corrects her, tactician or tactics. You know, you were right the first time. Like, it just throws those little things in. I love it.
Yeah.
But I'm so happy he's got top billing on this show because he is by far one of the best.
Agreed. And one of the things that he says in that conversation alludes to what's coming, which is, you know, Stannis Baratheon is 5 days away with 500 ships, I think he says.
Ridiculous amount. Yeah,
and Cersei says, is that more than us? Like, one, she doesn't know. And two, the way that Tyrion says yes insinuates, yes, a lot more than us.
But now, the wildfire, were they making that for her or for the king?
They were for her.
They were making it for her, but he's got it all under control now. He's basically gotten his hands on it, and he's working it.
And I was pleasantly pointed out by Lou Page on Twitter, Busy Zombie Lord, that the Fire Maester, the guy or the monk.
Yes, yeah.
It's Roy Dotrice. He's the guy that reads the audiobooks, except for book four. But out of the five audiobooks, Dotrice reads all of these, which is how I've been experiencing the books. And I can't believe I didn't pick up on it, because I read a rumor somewhere that he was going to be a maester, not a monk. So I was expecting him to be.
They are maesters, though, that do that, though, aren't they?
Well, I guess, but it wasn't like he was a main character.
No,
you know,
for
he
sure.
was in it for a blip. So I kind of expected him to be one of the maesters, like Stannis's maester, or somebody that was there but was short-lived. Like, the character didn't have, like, you know, seasons and seasons to be in the show, but might have been, you know, quite small. He could have been a warlock, you know, in Carth. That would have been cool. But I have to kind of go back and and watch that episode again and just watch that segment, because I'm curious, because I was not paying attention. I completely missed it.
No, I didn't pick up on his voice at all.
Yeah, no. Which you would think that I would after listening to all these books.
But yeah, especially you, because you've listened to all. I've only listened to the first one on audiobook. So after that, I've read all the rest of them.
Yeah,
so
I'm really I'm more than halfway through book three. I want to say I'm 2/3, and I really like book three compared to book two.
Yes.
Yeah. Way better. Speaking of Carth, the scenes with Daenerys this week. I can't say I was a fan. How did you guys feel about them?
Yeah, just sort of blasé. I don't know. Like, the warlock thing was interesting initially. I was like, are they twins? And when we saw them in the initial episode, because there's only like two of the warlocks, and now there's like this room full of them. I was like, what's up with that? Anyway. You
know, they have the power.
Clone army sort of thing?
I think it's Pyat Pree, who is the warlock that does a lot of the talking, just doing a spell. And they do a really subtle job of... like making it magic. Like, it's not, there's no poof, there's no, you know, incredible things happening. It's just kind of, he blips and he's across the room. Mm-hmm. And I think it was one of the ways that I do like the way that the show handles magic, and that it just kind of happens and they don't necessarily beat you over the head with it.
Yeah.
So that I thought was interesting. Although I don't like the way that the dragons were taken from Daenerys and then given back to her within an episode. Like, I just, like, why did you bother?
Maybe it was a way to get all the 13 together into one room under a different pretense. I don't know.
Did they give them back to her in that episode, though?
They didn't give them back to her in that episode.
Well, I think
they announced that they would.
Yeah, but are they going to give them back to her? Or are they going to give her back to her and then keep her captive so that she'll be able to raise the dragons for them? Because without her, the dragons die.
Because you can see that when, oh my God, name fart again.
Zero Zone Daxus?
No, Knight, her Knight.
Jorah Mormont.
Mormont, thank you. When he killed, air quotation marks, everyone in the chat room and listening to this, I just did air quotation marks, kill. One of the warlocks. They, there was no reprisal. There was no, return act of vengeance, you know, like he stabbed it. It died. And the guy was right there in front of them saying, come to our house. You know, we've got your dragons. Yeah. Come and get them. And we're out of here. And, you know, so like she didn't see that. They're inviting her. All she has to do is come to them and then we'll give you your dragons back. Right. So she's seen it, but she doesn't want to believe it because, you know. All the blood and stuff that happened. So
yeah, I kind of felt like the hostile tech over in Carth by Zero Zoran Daxus and Pyat Pree could have just happened. It didn't necessarily need the dragons to propel things, but I guess in the books it did take her a longer time to get to the warlock place or to be coaxed there in a different way. There was a lot more talking. So I guess they had to change it for. You know, the speed of the show at which things have to happen. Because, I mean, like, there's stuff coming, and there's only three episodes left in the season.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they really have to tie stuff up quickly, or, well, either tie it up or get it to a point where they can leave it, you know, for a season cliffhanger.
Who's a chick with a chainmail on her head?
Who is that?
I don't know.
And what's up with her saying, will you betray her again? Like, how did he betray her the first time? I'm confused.
Because he was feeding information back to Westeros.
Oh, yes, okay.
Right, so, but she still doesn't know that, though.
Yeah, but that was clear, and I think, well, not clear, but that was given to you as a little hint in season one when he talked to a little boy at the marketplace, and he said that something about Varys sends his regards or something.
The spider thing, yeah.
Spider thing,
you're,
yeah.
You're free to come back kind of thing.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, no, that's exactly what it was. But I think, but that was also before he experienced all that he experienced with Daenerys, so I think he's obviously much more devout now.
Well, he's in love.
Well, and she said, "You're that's very familiar. You're too familiar with me now." And buddy, back off.
It's
a mama dragon.
Well, she's got a bite now, and I liked it. I like that she's not this timid little girl anymore.
I guess stealing the dragons and killing her hand servants is another way of sort of stealing her for what's coming. I guess. So.
The biggest part of this episode that I felt was weak was all of the scenes with John and Ygritte.
Oh my God. Horrible.
They're just painting John to be one big fuck up. The 20-year-old virgin, you know?
Yeah.
16-year-old virgin.
No title. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, John the Mrs. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, she.
Was that a knife in your pocket?
They're always all embarrassed and stuff.
Well, there's nothing, like I said before, there's nothing subtle about the way that she acts. And it doesn't come off as attempted seduction at all. And it doesn't help that the actor is being horribly unsexy and sticking out her lower jaw. And it doesn't look alluring at all.
No, they never made her out to be a beauty in the book anyway.
Sure, they did.
No, they didn't. She said her teeth were all messed up.
Crooked teeth maybe, but that they still had like the touched by fire and the beautiful red hair and these other things that John found endearing.
Sure that's
you know?
A huge deal because it's not everybody's got red hair in this place, right?
Yeah, so. I guess.
Anyway, they're not regarded as gingers.
Yeah.
and really, you know, being so isolated like they are for such a long period of time, you know, there's like, you know, isolation hot and then city hot, you know?
But seriously, 16 years old. Yeah, I want to jump your bones. No. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't enjoy the scenes. I don't find anything that they say even, you know, remotely. What's the word I'm looking for? Enticing or compelling. Nothing compelling.
And also, John giving up who he is to her that early is like, you know, so when he does get surrounded, they now know that he is the son of the Lord of the North sort of thing, right? So.
Oh, yeah, because he told her that he's Ned Stark's bastard son.
Yeah.
You know, anyway.
I am a little bit biased because I really dislike her character in the book, so there was little chance of me liking her in the show anyway. So I have to confess that I'm not coming at it from a clear mind.
You're being sexist, Joel?
Not sexist. I'm being racist against free folk. North of the Wall. If you're north of the Wall, I got no time for you.
Ooh.
It's hard. Wrong side of the track.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
Wrong side of the wall.
Yeah. Hey, look. I don't raise my dead.
Do you have gingers, Joel?
Nice. Oh, man.
My sister's a ginger. I have to be careful. My grandma was a ginger. Yeah. My cousin's a ginger. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. But I guess, the question comes, like, what would you do to your cousin to get out of jail? You know, are you going to murder the ginger with a stone? Is that where you draw the line? Like, what will it take? I mean, since you are going back to the clink, like, you know, you've got five weeks to consider what's going to happen to your ginger cousin. 5 weeks to think about it, right? Too funny. Well, the last scene of the show, of course, is something that we can't not talk about, which is the big reveal from Theon. Now, Chad and I, reading ahead in the books, we know what Theon did. So I was curious as to how it was going to be revealed. But Peyton, what did you think?
You get one hit when they're approaching the farm, and Hodor's got the kid on his back, and they're walking through, and the youngest kid's like, "Let's go in and get something to eat," and then you know the other kid's like, "No, we can't, because if you go in there, you know they ask him later, they're going to kill the worker, some sort of thing," and he says, "Oh yeah, but you know I know this farm, you know there's two orphans from Winterfell here," and the other guy said, "Yeah, this kid and this kid, and he's really good at climbing trees and so on."
Right.
Anyway, so. You know, that would be the thing, because there's no sign of Hordor. There's no sign of the missus there. And plus, the kid, you know, I'm assuming about maybe a year has gone by at this point where, you know, he's been crippled, so his legs are probably atrophied. So the other kid's legs didn't quite look the right and in the right age, but, you know, his legs look a little too normal. Anyway, yeah.
What I will say, though, the editing at the end, if you didn't know it, it might have been hard to follow, because they said send the maester back, Maester Lewin, send him back, yeah. And you know, and then you can tell that the set that they used for the farm was probably another set for
Winterfell.
So yeah. You know, you could see, and I'm like, okay, yes, they're in the farm because they found the walnut shells.
Yeah,
too easy. And they send him home. Okay, send him home, and then. You know, he's hoisting him up, and there comes Lewin, like, around the corner. No, what did you do? And you're like, okay, yes, there's direwolf banners, but is that the only hint you're giving us that that's Winterfell? Because I'm not a fan of that kind of stuff.
Well, I sort of got the impression they were still on the farm, and he brought him back. They sort of sent him away until they found the kids. Couldn't find the kids. Take care of these other two kids as a replacement.
Yeah.
They're buggered off. So now he'll go back and put the word out that, you know, he went and killed these two kids, and... He's a real badass out of any mess with, right?
Yeah, I think... See, it's hard for me because of reading ahead in the books. I didn't catch that, Chad. I knew right away that it was back at Winterfell.
Okay.
I think maybe because of the larger walls and the number of people that were there.
Nah, I don't know. It's the set. Like, it's the same set. You can see the wall. It's the same wall. And
Think it was the same wall.
Anyway, the only thing that it's, and I knew that's what it was because that's how it was in the book and all that. But they only gave you direwolf banners, and that was it. And those were only subtle in the background. You know, and then he comes around the corner, and it's nobody's really moved. There's no, like, okay, we're riding on the horse now. You know, just a quick shot of them moving. They never, and don't do that to me. Give me something. You know,
and the other reason why I thought it was still on the farm was like, why would you bring back burnt bodies to Winterfell?
Well, because that's what they do. They hang, when you take a fort and you kill somebody, you hang their head, you put their head on a spike on the fort wall, you hang them. Well, because that's the other thing there is there's a big gate. They're being hung on either side of the gate, are they not?
Yeah, well, yeah, they're already hung on the, yeah, but well, what I mean is like, would you save them to bring them back and to do that in front of everybody at Winterfell, or would you do it and then bring the bodies back? If you did it elsewhere and brought the bodies back, it's not the kids, it's the orphans. So I'm thinking.
Well, that's probably why they didn't show that. I mean, maybe that's the device. I mean, maybe they're doing it on purpose so that they don't have to show you guys that. Like, I don't know. Yeah. But, I mean, either way, it was one of the better endings, I think, to shows as of late.
Yeah, because you also see when he's pointing to him, you know, you Theon, you sort of see he's about the barf as well, because he has no, he's realizing how far he's falling, right?
Yeah,
and how far he's gone. He stepped for all for the love of a father who basically threw him away.
Yeah,
he threw him away. You know,
Right on.
And he's just another tool for his father to get the crown, his throne back. So
yeah. So beyond that, any final thoughts on episode 7?
No, not really.
Cool. Yeah.
does Kat kill Jamie? Probably not.
Yeah, right on. Well, this is where we talk about some of the other TV movies and video stuff that we have been consuming. No spoilers. We were going to talk about The Avengers, but we have decided because Chad hasn't seen it and will be away. Plus, it's barely been out for 2 weeks, so we thought that we would push our Avengers Roundtable to next week, where I believe, I will confirm with him later, that Matthew Ducharme from Comics Coast to Coast and at Matt the Wad on Twitter will be joining us, because he is another comic fan and comic book movie fan. He was really excited to see the film, and he has definitely seen it at least once. So he is great to pop on the show. And while Chad's away, we'll also be trying to find some other guests to fill in, including, I'm hoping, Garrett Weinzierl from StarCast, and This Week in Blizz for, I want to say, the final episode of Game of Thrones. We're still going to be working out the details on that. He said that he wants to come on, but he's very busy, so we shall see what is coming. So, Peyton, what else have you been watching this week? Anything interesting?
Not really, just working away, listening to more comedy podcasts and stuff like that. But I did watch on Netflix, they had Kung Fu Panda 2 up.
Oh, yes.
And I haven't seen that, but I gave it a watch. And, you know, I thought, you know, some moments in there, you know, it didn't have the same heart as the first one. But I think going into the second one, you know, there's much higher expectations. Because going to the first one, it's like, you know, being a Pixar fanboy, you know, you're going like, oh, this is another DreamWorks vehicle. And you're like, that was awesome, right? And then the second one, you're like, okay, you know, I think it worked on some levels. It tried a little harder, but,
yeah,
you know. And
I watched that too. And I actually joked on Get Glue or wherever I checked in. I basically attempted to finish it. I didn't finish it in one sitting because I got sick of it. But I called it Kung Fu Panda Poo because I did not like it. And the only redeeming quality it had was the villain.
Yeah, he's kind of fun.
And I think it takes a real skill to turn a peacock into a bad guy.
Like, that loses credibility right away.
Right away. You're like, not so threatening. But of course, they do a pretty good job with that. But I don't know. Did you feel, Peyton, that they were trying too hard with Kung Fu Panda 2?
I don't know. It just, you know, like they sort of had a formula. They were trying to go away from the formula, but stay close to it, you know, from the first film. And. Mm. You know, they had to, you know, get the master, the old master. He had to come in at the end and help save the day, sort of thing.
Dustin Hoffman, yeah.
Dustin Hoffman's thing, yeah. It was, I don't know. It was, it's, you know, I thought, you know, visually it was very nice. You know, some big epic moments and stuff like that, right? But
yeah, you know, I just felt like there was a lot of like slow mo punch happens here. I'm going to jab at the camera because this was released in 3D, but on Netflix, it doesn't freaking matter. You're like, there's a lot of that kind of stuff going
Although,
on.
Although, you know, the 2D elements for the flashbacks and stuff were beautifully, beautifully executed.
Those were very, very cool. Yeah. Yes, I agree. There was, like I said, there were some things that were redeeming in their own little bits, but nothing I felt that really saved the movie as a whole. And the big thing for me that kept on putting me off, no matter how good it looked, no matter what was happening on screen, is that Jack Black is not Robin Williams. You cannot just let this guy go off in front of a mic and expect it to be a good movie because it's just going to be the same jokes over and over and over again. I prefer Kung Fu Panda, the first movie, because there was a solid script. He had, yes, some funny jokes, but he was given a good script.
Yeah.
So he had his jokes, he had his moments, but everything else was just like, this is the Jack Black show and it's not that good. You know, for Kung Fu Panda 2.
Yeah, well, they get towards the end, you know, they even do another skadooch moment, right? And then the first one, that had me howling. Right?
Yes.
But, and this one is like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of like, well, really, you know, come up with something different?
Yeah, you know, as a spectacle, it was good. I'm sure for, you know, for the target market of kids, it was great. Again, we're not the target market with this stuff anymore, right?
So no, I mean, that's true. I mean, I'm sure that it went over very well with families. Were you disappointed at all with the opening, I guess, the prologue?
The prologue.
Yeah, well, basically, instead of leaving the plot points of the movie a mystery through the whole thing, they basically tell you right away where he's from, how he came to be, what happened while he was gone. Like, it's like, well, you could have, that would have been great as a reveal just before Act 3.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to just giving it all to you in this, I mean, very beautifully animated classical piece at the beginning. But again, like, why all now? It's like, well, that's the whole movie. Can I go now?
That's like there's more of those Prometheus trailers, and I'm like, I don't even need to give these guys any money to see the film now. I've seen it all in the trailers.
Yeah.
Like, he's insisting on ruining the movie for me. Yeah. Anyway.
We've talked about that before, though, you know, marketing to your target audience of, you know, 20 to 25-year-old males that need to have everything, you know, spelled out for them on a silver platter.
And a hint of boobs.
Yeah.
Nice. We might show boobs in this. Oh, I have to see it. They might show boobs.
Yeah. That's what the internet is for.
Yeah. No, that's a midriff. Oh, man.
A midriff. What is this? 1991?
Yeah.
Belly button.
Chad, what about you, man?
Belly button, belly button, ninny, oh, it's ninny.
Come back, Chad. Come back to belly button. Come back to us. Come back to us and tell us what you've been watching.
Wow. Yeah, calm.
That's my safety word again. I forgot.
Why don't you say the word belly button?
Belly button.
Or is that your trigger word?
Shania Twain, belly button.
Oh, dude.
Oh, man.
Belly button.
Okay. Bring it back. Bring it back. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
That's what I watched. That's right. No bellies, belly buttons harmed in the making of this movie. Oof. Belly buttons. Okay. So what did I write here? I could read this word for word, and I still have no idea what I'm going to talk about now. Oh, no. Well, you know, GIS Gamer, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, it'll put you to sleep. Okay, I won't spoil the movie because somebody's being very, you know, no spoiler on me, so in the chat room. So anyways, I will say this. It is a who's who of British actors. Gary Oldman, love him. Colin Firth, awesome. Tom Hardy, who plays Bane. We've talked about him before on the show.
Yes.
He's in it. My God. John Hurt, he's in it. There's people you're like, oh my God, that guy. Oh my God, that guy. Full of those kind of people. I like Gary Oldman's character. It's not a big stretch for him. He definitely can do this kind of role in his sleep, but it's long-winded. It's very long-winded. It's easy to lose track. My wife fell asleep through it, and when she woke up, she said, "So who did it?" And I told her, and she goes, "Oh, okay, yeah." You know, like, you figure it out. It's no big, I didn't find it a big surprise. It's pretty easy. But at the same time, when they're getting fed all this information, you're like, really, it can't be him then, because that's too obvious. No, it was. You know, so I don't know. But I enjoyed it for the actors, because I'm a fan of most of the actors that are in there. And there was a thing, they do flashback a lot, and Gary Oldman's glasses change. And that's how you know that you're flashing back. So it's tough. So if you get funny Gary Oldman, I'll have to check that out later. Yeah. Chat room. Anyways, so you know, if you get some time on your hands, you get a little over 2 hours. It's not a spoiler. What are you talking about? Call me a jerk. Wow.
GIS Gamer is continuing to give Chad a hard time from the chat room.
Yeah.
I guess
no one's clued in that, you know, if they didn't want spoilers, you could just not listen to this segment.
Oh, mute.
Tony did.
Tony did.
By the way, in Hero Academy, I've started Proxy Wars with GIS Gamer, because technically the hat for poop is still on.
Forgot all about that. I should get back into it.
I didn't forget all about it. The game is just boring me to tears now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not into it at all. I just can't get excited to jump into Hero Academy whatsoever. I don't know why. And I only have six games. It's just, I'm bored with it. It's done nothing. I think it was the addition of that fourth class, or that fourth race, that just
I don't like suck.
I was like, meh, it's just not interesting. It's just, for me, it's more like there's no more strategy. It just feels like hack and slash.
It depends on the quality of player you're playing against. Strategy has changed. I mean, seriously, like, do I want to lose to GIS Gamer? Not at all.
hack and slash doesn't work for me, man. I've been trying.
You know, like, you really, I'm counting squares now. I'm counting squares. Like, okay, if he moves this, and this, are these guys going to be in range of the heavy hitters? Is he wearing me down? Is she doing this? Is this? I am completely absorbed now into it, and I know when I start playing GIS Gamer again, I am writing shit down. Seriously, it's going to get like that. That's how serious I get into it, for sure. But that's what I said. I started a proxy war. I sent someone in to go attack her. To see,
Archer to Demon Knight 6. Yes. Mm-hmm. I've also been very busy, so I haven't really had a whole lot of time.
Okay, we'll forgive you.
Yeah. Speaking of video games, the one thing I have had time to play, and if I do have time to play a game, I am not playing Hero Academy if I can play Diablo 3. which is basically because I haven't really been watching anything out of my normal podcasts and stuff. Diablo 3 is my big media consumption thing this week, and it only just launched yesterday. But Jocelyn and I had a Diablo date where we went into the game and we went around Tristram killing bad guys and doing all kinds of fun stuff. And despite all of the excitement and frustration that a lot of players were having with a lot of server problems and install errors, both Jocelyn and I lucked out and were able to log in when we wanted to and played straight through most of the evening until Jocelyn lost power.
So we dropped the ball, Ontario.
Yeah, well, it was nothing to do with Blizzard. It was just her whole town went dark. Everything just kind of went out. So it was actually kind of late. It was probably around midnight. It was probably a good time for us to stop playing. So that was fun.
Yeah, time to move.
There is that. There is that. Yeah. But we decided to get in. I had played, we both played the beta. I had played more characters in the beta because I had a late night where I couldn't sleep one night, so I tried a bunch of different stuff. I opted to create a monk, which is a combination of spell casting and fist fighting, which is very satisfying. When you kick somebody and you bust them in two and guts go everywhere, you feel like you've given them a pretty hard kick. Jocelyn started off with the Demon Hunter. I feel probably at fault after I suggested that, but she went back to the Wizard, which is what she was playing in the beta, because it was a lot more fun. The Demon Hunter, from what both of us felt, like even just watching her play the Demon Hunter, like she just wasn't excited because there really wasn't a lot of visual payoff. Like you shoot arrows and they stick in the other people, but that's kind of it. Where I'm like punching people and there's big like red flames coming off of my feet and big green things coming off of my hands, and she's in the back going p-choo, 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 p-choo. Like, I was like, not very satisfying. So when she switched back to the Wizard, she was casting a lot of spells, including premature frost bolts everywhere, which was quite funny. And she in her defense, she was mowing people down. There were some targets involved. People were bursting into
vapor. They were taking premature frost blasts in the face.
Yes, they were. Premature frost facials. Lovely. We definitely have an explicit tag this week.
Frostbite is the
poor
worst.
Poor frost.
Oh, God. Well, the...
is that Jack Frost dipping at your nose?
Belly buttons. Yes!
Oh, boy. Well, the only issues that I had with the game, which I think are in a large part due to my older system, my computer is 3 years old, so the connection was a little bit laggy because of the graphics that it's trying to push through. I was also playing via Wi-Fi just because I didn't want to be in my studio. I wanted to be relaxing in my living room and playing, so I was out there. So that might have had a little bit to do with it as well. But I do have two small game, I guess, design issues that... I'm surprised we're not ironed out in the years that this game has been in development. The first I experienced in the beta, and they didn't change it at all, which is the loot system. Everything looks the same. So you pick up four different swords. They range in power and ability, and in your bag, they all look just like a sword. Like, they've done nothing to put, like, a green background behind it or a red background. When you click on it and it opens up into a larger window and it says, this is a sword, it does 13.4 damage and it's got firepower and all this kind of stuff, then you see a graphic that's still just a sword, but then it at least has, like, a color or a flame or something to it. But just in your backpack, there's nothing to indicate which sword is better than the other. And that is really annoying. So it's really time consuming to say, well, I've picked up four swords, but which one do I want? I mean, so it all takes a lot of time to sort out in kind of micro increments.
But the Zombie Lord said that the text is color coded. So,
well, yes, but that doesn't help anything. I'm just looking at a picture.
Yeah.
It doesn't help anything in the inventory. The other thing is not something that I've experienced a lot of yet because Jocelyn and I only got to level 8 or 9 and we're not fighting ginormous bosses yet. But I watched Garrett and the guys from This Week in Blizz stream live over Twitch TV yesterday afternoon. I was sort of paying attention, sort of not, because I was taking care of some work. But whenever, you know, one of the guys on the cast said, oh my God, look at that, this is going to be crazy, and they're all fighting this giant monster, I looked over to see this really cool thing, like a tree or some sort of like minotaur-like thing coming at them. And these things are huge. And they all have really good systems, so you're getting to see, even though it was kind of low resolution on the stream, you still get to see the textures and the colors, and it looks like a beautiful model. But whenever they strike the thing, it flashes white. And I mean completely blinding white. And with three of them all attacking the same thing, the whole fight, this thing is white. And I just like, well, what's the point of having all these beautiful textures if the moment that you touch it, it just goes to a white blur? And that, I thought, was really, really bad. Because, I mean, being the artist, I really like the game design stuff and the art direction in these things. I mean, the world is beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, there's fog and mist and creepy trees and all kinds of really cool stuff. But I was really disappointed that these monsters and things all go white. I mean, we got a little taste of it when Jocelyn and I took on, like, a Ghost King. And he's this cool kind of transparent green vapor, kind of like the king in the mountain from Return of the King.
Okay.
Sort of thing, like Skeleton King. Mm-hmm. And again, as soon as you hit him, he turns into a big white blur.
You know what I want to do? I want to see a game where if Buddy's a tree and you come at him with a sword and you hack at him and you catch him in his leg, you take a chunk out of his leg and it's there, gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
They do.
Give
that
me a game like that, and then you premature frost blast him, he freezes. He's done. You kill him, you move on. Oh.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Not so much in stages, but everything dies according to how you've killed them. So mm-hmm. if I have a fire sword and I attack the guy and I get fire damage on him, the corpse on the ground is burnt.
Okay.
Whereas if I hack somebody with a sword that doesn't have fire damage on them, they get split in two and guts go everywhere. There's probably four or five different ways that different things die. So that mm-hmm. is cool. You can kill things with lightning. And I think if you kill something with frost, that the body on the ground is actually like all frosty and okay. in bits, or they break into pieces, like, you know, like Terminator 2 sort of thing. So there is that, but nothing in stages, like you're saying, where, like, you know, somebody's limb falls off or anything like that. I should ask Jocelyn if there's any games that actually do that, because she obviously plays a lot more video games than I do. There might be something for console where, you know, people's arms fall off or different stages of a boss where certain things
with happen. Call of Duty 4. I mean, that's the last game I really have played in a long time. Mm-hmm. I refuse to play on the regular servers. I play on the hardcore servers where you shoot a person once and they die.
Right.
You know, they okay, maybe depending on the weapon, maybe one or two rounds and then they're dead. But I've got no time for this. Oh, is my health meter and now he's back alive. I'm tired of that now. Like, that's for me. You want to get me into a video game? Like, you shoot the person once, they die. Good. You know, carry on. They shoot them with a big frosty ball of, like, slushy or something. You know, they freeze. Come on, like, I don't know. That's we've seen all this before with WoW and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's nothing new, that aspect of the game.
Well, the difference between this and WoW is that this is very satisfying in the fact that when you punch, something reacts.
Okay.
When you dodge, you can get out of the way. Like, you physically have to move around. Everything is reacting to stuff that you're doing, which I thought was well done. In WoW, it's more like just the computer rolling, like you swing, they swing. If you did more damage, you win, like that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Whereas in this, it really, there's a little bit more, well, there's a lot more of a physical element than WoW. It's not 100% like Street Fighter, but it still has a combo of the... of those two, like it's kind of part Street Fighter, part WoW. But the thing that I didn't know going into Diablo when I played the beta, because I didn't like the beta at first either, it felt very hack and slash, like very repetitive, very spam the mouse button sort of thing.
Yes.
But
beep, 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 beep,
yeah,
beep,
exactly,
beep, beep, beep.
Exactly. But this was, because I got to level 9, whereas I only took my barbarian to level 3 or 4 in the beta, you earn different abilities and then you can choose different ways to augment those abilities depending on what situation you're in. So it does get more complicated and it does get more satisfying. And other things that weren't in the beta, like kickback and some other things, are really kind of a treat. So like when I do this hawk kick with my monk, I send everybody flying, which is very, very fun. And I can send them flying to Jocelyn, who then freezes them on sight. I mean, we had some really cool teammate moments where, like, I flash into a fight, kick a bunch of people over her direction. She turns them into, like, frosty statues, and I kick them from behind, and they explode. And, you know, she was shooting this, I don't know what it's called. I can't remember. It looks like a giant, it looks like a small galaxy the size of a basketball that she shoots into a crowd, and then it explodes and basically decimates everybody. Again, very fun. So there's a lot of stuff like that that I think is a bit of a payoff. So I'd like it. I have some grievances, but they're not enough to kind of break the game for me. They're hopefully things that might get addressed in patches later on, because Blizzard is really good at keeping these games updated and stuff like that. So, yeah. But yeah,
I saw an article there about Delphi I put up in the chat room that some guy beat it in 12 hours.
Yes. Like,
my God.
I logged in tonight to check out the auction house, which is another cool feature, and I looked at the hours that I've played, and it says 5 and change, because I played a little bit yesterday morning because I thought I was going to be on a podcast about it, and then I played like 3, I think, last night with Jocelyn as kind of our evening hanging out online together, and we are only level... I'm level 9, and she might be level 6 because she went back and started a new character. And, like, I can't imagine blowing through this game.
Well, the stats he has there, he says 12 hours, 29 minutes, 368 lifetime kills, 412 elite kills, 168,000 gold as a barbarian on normal difficulty. Anyway. And there's also a Korean... two other groups of Korean and Chinese gamers that beat it in 7 hours.
Yeah. Good for them. Yeah. You've wasted 60 bucks. Why,
it takes all the fun out of it, I would think.
Oh, my God. Yeah, look, there's so much stuff in this in terms of the lore. Like, you can follow just the quests that tell you what you're doing next in order to save Tristram, which is the town that you start off in, and then you go into different... There's different acts. They treat it like a movie. But there's so many off little things. Like, there's a blacksmith and his son that you could talk to him and save his son or look for his son. Or as apprentice, you can talk to different villagers. As you walk by villagers, you overhear them talking, and you can blow by them, or you can stop and listen, because it's interesting. Yeah. And it's not...
These guys are just like, run!
Yeah, exactly!
Leroy Jenkins!
And it's not something you have to read either. It's all audio. It's all voice acted. So it's really convenient to kind of chill out and listen.
How big is the file?
The game itself is 8 gigs.
Oh, okay.
Most of it is online. That's one of the other beefs that people are complaining about, is that because of all the server issues, previously you would need a server to play multiplayer. But if you wanted to play by yourself, you could just solo on your machine. You do have to be connected to Battle.net to play this even by yourself.
Ooh.
But I feel that that's probably a decision at Blizzard to keep most of this very rich game content off of your system.
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah. I don't want a 30 gig file just to play this game.
No.
Right? Well, my WoW folder is upwards of 20 gigs.
My God.
Yeah.
I Flight Sim X, I think, was a Microsoft Flight Sim X back when I used to have my PC. That was 13 gigs, I think.
Wow.
And that was, a couple of years ago, because it's the whole world. All the airports of the world are on there, right? And you fly over for wherever you want to go. But, that was huge. So... Yeah, that's too much. It's too much.
Yeah,
for your system, so it's too much to dedicate. Especially, like, I keep anywhere from 15 to 20 gigs free all the time now on my system, and I'm trying hard to keep that on now. So
keeping about 20% free for most operating systems. I think some systems will, obviously, the more free space you have, the better. But 20% is kind of the absolute limit that you should be operating at in terms of free space. Before we end the Diablo talk, I should mention that Jocelyn and Ryan, if Jocelyn does not listen to me and is going ahead on the Gamers Inn this evening, because
she's gone now.
She's gone, is she? Okay, good. Yeah. I can talk smack about her. No, she wasn't feeling well, and I told her to skip the show because she was feeling quite ill. But hopefully she's feeling better and that she's able to do the show tonight. And one of the reasons she wanted to do the show is they've been advertising all day that they actually have a couple of, maybe more than two, I don't know, game codes for free 7-day trials for Diablo.
Okay.
Because several people that play got the collector's edition but also had a digital copy that they won somehow, so they didn't need those trials, so they wanted to send them in to the Gamers Inn to give away as prizes. So if you're listening or have a chance to listen to the Gamers Inn, they start shortly, and you can listen live and possibly win a 7-day trial to Diablo. And like I said, it's only an 8 gig download, so it's really just to try it. It's not going to take very much space. It's not a big investment, and it is a whole lot of fun.
Free stuff!
Yeah, and if you want, you can actually beat it in 12 and a half hours.
Yeah, you've got 7 whole days. You could beat it 7 times if you really wanted to. Oh, man. Well, I guess we can scoot over into our reading section where Chad has got some news on his current Hunger Games adventure.
Yeah, I'm almost done the third book, Mockingjay. I finished Catching Fire. I really got to say that they could have put that part, that book, with the first book or part of the second book. It was just kind of like a stepping stone. It just led up to what, you know, you thought was going to come anyway. So, yeah, it was cool. The author really, you know, it talks a lot more about the world in the third books and what's going on. And because the books are told from Katniss's point of view. Mm-hmm. So, like, in the movie, you saw a rebellion going on in 11, but she didn't know that, you know? Okay. So, like, in the first book, you don't know any of that stuff, right? And then only tidbits of information as it goes on. But, you know, things are moving, progressing. If you thought, you know... she's so hard on herself, it's hilarious, right? Like, she doesn't open up to anybody, or the main character, but the relationships that she's in, and, like, you know, saw in the movie quickly that, you know, she was with one guy and then there was the other guy back home that was waiting for her, right? So you still have no clear line by the third book of what's going on with that. And it's funny here, I'm getting sucked into the teen star-crossed lovers kind of thing. It's ridiculous. I'm like, well, just pick one, for God's sake. I don't care what you do. Just move along, right?
Do something, yeah.
Yeah. It's the one thing I would love for James Cameron to have done these movies. Specifically, the tech in the movie, in the book. The author has no idea about tech. No idea whatsoever. James Cameron creates all these... things in, like, Avatar or Alien, and everything's functional. You know, I would have loved to have seen him get a hold of, like, the tech aspect and just explain a little bit more of that, because that would be really cool. But I'm about halfway through this book now, and I'll probably be finished by the end of the weekend. Actually, probably by Monday night, because my Monday is 2 flights and a 3-hour bus ride. So, yeah.
No, thanks.
Yeah, so anyway, I will be finished the book on Monday, guaranteed. So
yeah, right on. Well, you'll have to tell us about it when you get back.
Yeah, for sure, if I remember. Remind me, yeah. Yeah.
We'll ask.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us into our email section. This is where we would normally read listener email, but we don't have any this week. So a quick note to thecitadelcafe@gmail.com would get your email, questions, comments, etc., read right here. So the last section is the Internet Minute, where we just pick a couple of quick things to talk about on the show that we found online. And I've got two really quick things here that I'll start with. The first is a Marvel animated fan short. It's only 2 minutes. It's just a couple of guys, or at least one guy's vision, animating a bunch of really goofy things happening with Avengers characters. And because I've been kind of immersed in the Avengers world lately, I thought it was fantastic. And even though I had found it beforehand, our friend Donald DeVoe on Twitter had sent me a tweet linking this as well. So thanks for pointing that out, Donald. We appreciate it.
It's got like 300,000 hits on it. It started off as a couple of little sketches, and then he just turned into his little short. It's awesome.
Very, very funny. Very, very funny stuff, yeah.
Did you see that one cartoon about the Avengers? What if they were portrayed as women? Like how women pose?
Yes, I saw that.
Their asses and boobs. And
George Takei, did he put that on Facebook?
He might have else, too. It was all over the place.
If all the Marvel men posed like women, yeah. And actually, it's very telling. Like, it's very true. You know, they've got all these guys in these cool superhero poses, and then this, what's her name, Peyton? Scarlett Johansson, the character.
Black Widow,
thank you. She's standing there, and instead of facing you with her two guns pointing at you, she's got her ass facing you. You know, so she's sticking her bum out at you, and she's got her gun up in the air. It's like, it's not very aggressive at all. Like, I don't know. I think they.
Well, I guess it's about what she's going for.
No, but I think they make a very good point. And the other one I just found before the show. I had a bunch of other picks that I had in this section earlier this week, and I had to narrow it down to two. And this one came to me via Neil Patrick Harris on Twitter, and it's entitled Blowjob. Now, before your mind goes to the gutter, it is a photographer that has been doing a portrait set of people with gale force winds blowing directly into their face.
And it's awesome.
So, I mean, it is laugh out loud funny. some of the things that these probably otherwise very attractive people are having done to their face with a leaf blower or something stronger. It is ridiculous.
It'd be great, great driver license pictures.
Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Those are awesome.
Fantastic. Absolutely. I suggest that you check out our show notes and check out these pictures. He's done 100 of them so far. So if you don't have the time, wait until you're home from work or need a coffee break before you dive in. Very, very cool stuff. Peyton, what are your picks this week?
The animated Marvel short was one I was thinking of. Saw a couple of the trailers throughout the week, like the Revolution one there for the that 15 years after we lose power sort of thing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I see that show doing very well. I think it'll probably hook people like sort of a cross between Lost and Heroes and who knows what else. So mm-hmm. we'll see how it goes. But there was just a quick little article I saw on Geekology about George Lucas and his property. I'm not sure if you guys...
I read it just before I came on the show.
Is it Wicked?
Oh, that is awesome.
Apparently George Lucas has all this land by his property. And for years he'd been wanting to build a state-of-the-art, 200,000 square foot facility recording studio, right? 300,000 square foot production facility that would have 350 employees. And he's been trying to do it for several decades. He's done all these studies on it, how it'll affect the environment and everything else, and all these people. Anyway, his neighbors have this neighborhood committee, and they don't want him to do anything there because it'll bring the property value down, and it's the area would be much more well suited instead of being industrial use, do it for housing. So he says, okay, well, F you, I'm going to go ahead and give it away to these low income housing development for the land. And he's given them all the studies that he's done. And anyway.
The only thing rich people hate more than like something else is poor people.
Poor people. Right? Wow. And it's like the biggest F you to the neighbors. And it just makes me smile. I'm thinking, okay, I'll give you Jar Jar for that. That's okay. Yeah. Like, this is fine, man.
You are forgiven for Jar Jar.
Yeah, because like low income housing for seniors and for people who can't afford to live somewhere else. So like that is brilliant, and it's a beautiful area, and it's going to be awesome if it comes through. So.
Well, do you want? I mean, I think it's great. I think it's a great move. I think it's a great statement. But do you really think that the homeowners association, I mean, the people that he gives this land to are going to be under the same rules and regulations that he is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I know that it's a housing thing. Like I know he wasn't planning a housing development, but just because they're planning a housing development doesn't necessarily mean that a low income housing development is going to get greenlit.
Well, yeah. Yeah. We'll see what happens. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great FU.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's a great move. Like he's dumping an absolute ass ton of paperwork on these people, if nothing else.
Yeah.
I mean, if it goes through even greater, like I like the idea of, low income housing for retired people on fixed incomes, maybe even war vets, et cetera. But I don't see it happening. I don't see the people that were been fighting him for so long on the studio space just rolling over and letting this happen.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. So you're saying here, in order to smooth over along the development, he's already given the Martin Community Foundation, he's already given them all the pricey technical studies and land surveys he spent years conducting.
Wow.
So
I love it. I love it. I love when people like that do piss off for a good cause. I love that.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Funny. And I guess that'd be about it for me. When Chad was talking about Gary Oldman earlier, I popped up on the chat there a gif from the professional when he's saying everyone. I'm not sure if you had a chance to check that out, Chad, but
no.
I'll just throw it back in the chat room there, and I'll throw up the show notes.
He was good in that movie, man.
Oh, everyone. Anyway, it was awesome. But it's in the show notes there now too. So, and funny thing, they replaced his eyes with his teeth. It's kind of funny.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right, so. Chad, how about you?
I've got two quick. Well, I don't know if they're quick, but it's funny. I was reading Popular Science in the office the other day, and it was an older Popular Science from back in the fall, and it was how a college class tracked down Osama bin Laden. And I was like, what? And for you guys, the link is actually the title If you just click on the title, it'll come up.
There we go.
So it's a college class of geographical information systems students.
GIS students?
Yes, GIS students, indeed. So it piqued my interest because, hey, I know a GIS tech, right? So anyways.
And she could find you, apparently.
But what it is, it's just how they use these two things, distance decay and island biogeography. And it's just they apply things for plants and animals and how animals move between large islands and close proximity and stuff, like from different areas for food. And like they have software and different, like obviously Jocelyn would be the one to tell us how this really goes to work. I just did a little quick paragraph, but these students narrowed it down. They said, okay, well, what are his needs for Osama and where has he been? And they used all this stuff that they had that was available to everybody, and they built their little things and their little programs. And they had it narrowed down to this city in Pakistan. Now, ultimately, you know, Osama's dead because the Navy SEAL Team 6 went in and got him. And it wasn't where they thought he was, like where the students thought he was. The Americans knew where they were. They found him because of his messengers and stuff like that, his couriers. That's how they ended up tracking him down. But they found him in a compound. They had the compound they picked for him was almost identical to the one that he was living in. It was in a town almost the same size. The similarities were really cool, and it's just they missed it obviously by 280 kilometers, which isn't exactly a pinhead kind of thing. But how they use this technology that is used for other things to kind of track them down, I thought it was really cool, and it piqued my interest because GIS. So
yeah,
what if they could use that to help track down escape prisoners or something as well.
Yeah, I think it's a little. The amount of resources to do this though is kind of large. But nowadays though, there's they were saying in that article, the amount of satellites that NASA's launched over the last 8 years is increased by 100% or something like that. They're just firing satellites up there, so they have the resources to map that stuff out. But I don't think Joe Blow robbing a liquor store is going to get time, FaceTime on this stuff. That's for sure.
No. Well, it does kind of make you wonder though, how many GIS techs work at Google and Facebook and how much they know about you.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. So hopefully when Jocelyn's obviously doing the Gamers In right now, but when she comes back and listens to this to do our show notes, I'd be interested to talk to her about us and what her thoughts on it if she reads the article.
For sure.
And then my other one was, man implants magnets. I will read anything you put on the teleprompter.
You stay classy, San Diego.
Yes. I was just trying to think of what one of the things he said in Ron Burgundy. They're making a Ron Burgundy part two.
Mm-hmm.
So a man implants magnets in his arm to hold iPod in place. Yes. Interesting, sir. Interesting. Oh, the Human Torch was denied a bank loan. The Human Torch was denied a blank loan. The Human Torch was denied a bank loan. Sorry, that's my Ron Burgundy. Anyway, but there's a link on here to CBC, and it's got a YouTube video implanted in the link, and it's him actually performing the minor surgery on himself to put them in.
And he uses
an iPod Nano. Is it a Nano?
It's the new Nano. It's the square the Nano new with the touchscreen. Yes.
Yeah.
And he's a body piercing tattoo artist, so he's obviously in the know on how to do all this kind of stuff.
Sterile instruments and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, the question that I have for this guy, or the one comment that I have, is that I hope he doesn't need an MRI anytime soon.
Well, the magnets themselves are not subdermal. They're still sticking through the skin, I think. So,
But you'd still have to take them out.
You'd still
have to, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, you've seen the people with the horns, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So they insert pieces of stainless surgical grade steel underneath it to stretch the skin out. Do it a couple times so the skin for the horns are slack. Then you can put coral underneath it. The body recognizes the coral as dead bone and calcifies over it, and then you end up with actual horns growing out of your head. It breaks through the skin, and then you got actual horns. That's the idea. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought Diablo exploding demons was creeping me out, but you officially win.
Peyton's got it figured out.
Wow.
Oh, my.
Right on. Well, that sounds like a fun, fuzzy note to end the show on. If you'd like to get in touch with the show, as I mentioned earlier, our email is thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. You can also stop by the show blog, which is thecitadelcafe.com, for our show notes, links, and other fun stuff we talk about here on the show. The show notes are written by the lovely Jocelyn Moffitt, also GIS Gamer on Twitter. The Gamers In podcast is her show, and if you are a gamer, you can check out Jocelyn and her co-host Ryan over at gamersinpodcast.com. The short social version for all the places you can find the Citadel Cafe online is just our name, The Citadel Cafe, all one word, Twitter, Facebook, Google+. We are there. Come find us if you need to. That is the end. If you have anything else that you'd like to add, gentlemen, now would be the time. Cheap, 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 cheap. I have been Joel Duggan from StarCrossedOnline.com, which is my weekly comic strip. You can follow me on Twitter and Google+ with just my name, Joel Duggan. Peyton, where can people find you online?
At CardboardTreehouse.com, as well as at Peyton Francis at Twitter and Facebook and whatnot. And how about you, Mr. Chatty Chad Chat? Where can people, the fine listeners of our fine products and program, fine user?
Chad Merlin at Twitter.
Well, you've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
I got nothing. I'm not very fast today.
So as easy and cheap it is then, okay.
You win the internet.
I win all the things.